Moving into October, sunrise will be at 10 past 7, sunset at 6:45 p.m. By midweek, temperatures will be around 16 centigrade and a little windy.
Welcome to Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell. This edition due with you on Saturday, the 27th of September.
Some stories coming up from the papers. Wednesday, the 17th of September, Fun City aims to transform Dudley Town. Looking back at the highest and lowest of Black Country Radio. Shpop could lose licence after £40,000 fine for employing illegal worker. Thursday's news. Canal Gem bursting with stories from the past, reopens. Crackdown on retail crime, dangerous drivers and antisocial behaviour. Extra urgent dental appointments available. Robotic surgery helps in cutting down time for patients on waiting list. Friday's news. Bearwood residents oppose opening of new off-licence in Bearwood Road. Police plea after cat burglarer is held, accompanied by a picture of the cat. Saturday's news. Severn Valley Railway unveils accessible restored 1920s coach with buffet and saloon bar. Walsall Conservative councillor resigns after going on Tommy Robinson March. More than 20 illegal worker suspects held in government clampdown. Monday's news. Climate change blamed for dozens of deaths in the region. Revamped of Edward Street Hospital for Mental Health Service completed. Tuesday's news. Boston campaign to improve the region's fortunes. Beacon Centre celebrates its 150 years of supporting blind people. Shocking statistics reveal widespread tooth decay and obesity of children in the area. Council overrules on its rejection of contentious new children's home.
All those stories and more coming up in this edition courtesy of Express and Star Publications. As usual, round about an hour and a quarter into this edition, we'll have the TV and radio listings and also from Talking News Federation, a couple of items about eye clinic liaison officers, and there's another item too. And we're squeezing in something I just received via Sandra from an old friend of SVI and the Talking News, Sophie Shuttlewood, who's been around Chance Glassworks in Albury, or Smethwick Albury. And I often go past that on the train, and it looks quite a mess at the moment, as Sophie will confirm. But just a snatch of oral history coming up towards the end of this edition. But right now, it's on to the first day's news from the papers.
This is James Brodie bringing you stories from the Express and Star, the 17th of September. Fun City aims to transform town. New attraction with virtual reality games key to rejuvenating night economy. This story is brought to you by Mark Andrews. It is the Fun City that aims to bring good times back to the Black Country town. A new £4 million attraction is ready to open in the centre of Dudley, inside a building that used to house the town's museum and art gallery. And it's seen as a key part of plans to regenerate the town centre, bringing at least 75,000 visitors a year into the town. It will be the main anchor of the town's new Stone Street leisure quarter, which also includes the Old Glasshouse pub and the Royal Keep Hotel, which will also be opening shortly, and are also expected to help revitalise the town's nighttime economy. It comes as the extension of the Midland Metro also nears completion, a move that will connect Dudley to the network and enable visitors to visit Fun City, as well as boosting existing attractions like Dudley Zoo and the Black Country Living Museum. A new attraction has been created by Hush Properties and offers people the chance to play electronic darts, indoor cricket centre and golf football challenges, a 1980s-style amusement arcade, karaoke rooms, virtual reality games and an escape room, shooting games and a cookery challenge. Hayley and Paul Andrews, who own it, says it's exciting to finally open the weekend. Paul said that we feel Dudley is right on the brink now and we're going to see Metro come online and we're going to see the new bus station. This was paramount for us. Looking back at the highs and lows as radio marks anniversary. This story is brought to you by James Vukmorovic. Supporting this article is a picture with the caption Happy Birthday Black Country Radio, presenter Billy Spakerman with bosses Keith Horsfall and Dave Brownsill. All three of them are holding up Happy Birthday stickers and balloons. The leading figures at Black Country Community Radio Station have been reflecting on the challenges and triumphs from a decade of broadcasting across the region. Dave Brownhill and Keith Horshall were there at the creation of the Black Country Radio in 2015, having discussed the plight of their own stations on a journey from an awards ceremony in London before deciding to put their resources together. From humble beginnings at a drafty church using antiquated broadcasting equipment, or having four modern studios which are the envy of professional stations at Cable Plaza on the waterfront in Briley Hill, Black Country Radio has become a station well known for its quality broadcasting and a place where the community has its heart. This has been shown in the honours won by the station over the years, from being given the freedom of Dudley Borough to being awarded the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service in 2021 and being named Community Radio Station of the Year in 2022 at the Community Radio Awards. Run and operated by more than 120 volunteers over two stations, including the community-focused BCR Extra, the journey to this point has been one station manager, David Brownhill, who has said that he has had his challenges but had had a wonderful ride. He said that we've had some difficulties over the years from having our equipment stolen in the early years, which I would say was the lowest point, but we've also had the highs of moving into our brand new studio at Cable Plaza. We've been lucky to get some of the awards as well from the awards for the work which we did during COVID to being given the freedom of the borough by the Mayor of Dudley and of course the Queen's Award and the Community Station of the Year. We've also seen a lot of individual progress and move on to a new career such as Lauren Redfern who is going to Radio 1 and we've been able to increase our reach as we are extending our broadcast areas to include Wolverhampton and Birmingham. Going forward we want to maintain what we've got, such as our shops in the Maryhill Centre and the Black Country Hub from which we want to set up a studio so we can broadcast live from the centre and just increase the areas that we can serve and get involved within the community. Station Chairman Keith Horshall said that we've gone from a drafty old church to four modern and super studios that someone said the other day looked like the BBC, and that's the measure of our success. We've also got Black Country Extra, which is a remarkable and unique station because it is so community focused and gives us a platform to 40 to 50 groups who tell their story and help people out there. There are volunteers and work experienced people who have gone on to work in broadcast radio, as well as people who have become journalists from their involvement. So this station is about progression and makes a big difference in people's lives, added Mr. Horsfall. Over 55s falling for tall tales as they're scammed online. Sob story from cash-strapped all workers amongst tactics used to prey on the vulnerable. This story is brought to you by Vicky Shaw. A jump in the reports of over 55s being conned by romance scams have been recorded at a major bank as it disclosed the most common jobs these criminals claim to be doing and the most likely excuses they make for urgently needing cash. Lloyds recorded a 52% rise in romance scams amongst victims aged over 55 over the past year compared with the previous year. Its analysis was based on scams reported by Lloyds Banking Group customers, which includes the brands Halifax and the Bank of Scotland, as well as Lloyds. It compared romance scams reports in the 12 months of July 2025 with scam reports made in the previous 12-month period. Lloyds said 55 to 64-year-olds are the most targeted age group, making up a fifth, almost 20%, of romance scam victims, followed by those aged 65 to 74, who make up 18% of cases according to this data. Alongside the jump in reports involving over 55s, Lloyds had also seen a 20% annual rise in cases involving victims aged between 35 to 44. Victims aged 75 to 84 lose the most on average to romance scams at £8,068, Lloyds said. The average loss across all age groups is £5,219. Romance scammers will often claim to be doing certain jobs to give an excuse for why they may be hard to contact or cannot meet up in person. According to Lloyds data, the most common occupation claimed by romance scammers were military personnel. Scammers often claim to be soldiers, perhaps stationed overseas or in conflict zones. Oil rig workers. This excuse is used frequently by scammers, both male and female, which have claimed makes communication difficult, Lloyds said. business owners, other common occupation scammers claim to hold our business owners, engineers and doctors, often claiming to be working abroad in conflict zones or on humanitarian missions, and the most common excuse used by romance scammers for needing extra money, according to Lloyd's data, are medical emergencies. Scammers sometimes claim either they or a family member need urgent medical treatment, such as after a car accident. Travel and living expenses. Criminals may request money for flights or travel expenses to visit the victim, or they might ask for help with rent, food or other daily expenses. Legal fees, fees owed, making tax or customs payments, or business problems. Scammers will often ask victims to send money to them via bank transfer, but other tactics include asking the victim to purchase online gift cards and send them instead. These are easy for the scammers to sell on and profit from, Lloyd said. In one case highlighted by Lloyd, an 80-year-old woman met someone online through a word game. The person claimed his son was working on an oil rig near Germany. He then claimed that his son was in a car accident and had died, and that he was going to work on the oil rig to finish the job in place of his son. He then claimed he had been arrested whilst travelling and needed to pay a tax bill, and the woman agreed to send £11,000. She later spoke to the bank, who told them that she'd been scammed. In another case, an 86-year-old man had met a woman on a singles website and they started texting. She claimed she had had a bad time for phone and video calls. Within a few weeks of chatting, she asked for help with money, claiming that she was travelling to Australia to retrieve some gold that she had inherited. He sent her money to cover the travel expenses for her to visit him, but she failed to show up. He ended contact, realising that he'd been scammed. He lost £2,260. Liz Ziegler of Lloyd's said, "Our specialist fraud prevention teams work hard to protect and safeguard customers from fraud, and romance scams are some of the cruelest cases. Taking advantage of people who are looking for love and companionship, fraudsters play with victims' emotions." Shop could lose licence after £40,000 fine for illegal worker. This story is brought to you by Christian Barnett. A shop could lose its licence after it was fined £40,000 for employing an illegal worker. Sandwell Council will decide the fate of Lifestyle Express, listed at Hargreaves Supermarkets in Hales Owen Road, Old Hill, after a list of illegal items including oversized vapes and fake non-duty paid alcohol and rolling tobacco were found during two stings earlier this year. A separate investigation by immigration officers from the Home Office also found one illegal worker at the shop. The borough's trading standards officers found 75 oversized vapes, counterfeit rolling tobacco and cigarettes, a pack of cigarettes with incorrect packaging and labelling, as well as fake vodka with unpaid VAT during an inspection in February. Trading standards officers also seized 5 bottles of counterfeits Prosecco with fake authenticity labels. The shop was inspected again in March and another 12 oversized vapes were seized by officers alongside a case of Jägermeister with fake VAT labels. The shop's licence holder, Jagpit Singh Kapoor, will face Sandwell Council's licensing committee at a meeting in Oldbury on September the 22nd. LJH Superstores, of which Jagpit Singh Kapoor is the director, was fined £40,000 for employing the illegal worker. Elon Musk's dire warnings of Britain plunging into civil war reveals a man who knows little about Britain or the British and yet feels qualified to pontificate on the state of our nation. Violence is coming to you, either fight back or you die. Like so many pundits and politicians, Musk focuses on the rage of a few hundred people lobbing lager cans in London, but totally overlooks Britain's vast reserve of decency and goodwill, which makes this nation one of the best places in the world to live, no matter what your colour or creed. Musk, the boss of Tesla, is one of the brightest and most visionary men of our age, but is also a reminder that it is perfectly possible for someone to be, at the same time, both a genius and a clot. The trouble is, the clots always seem to get the megaphones.
Hello, this is Mark, standing in for Debbie, with readings from the Express and Star from the 18th of September. Canal Gem, bursting with rich stories of the past, an article by Deborah Hardiman. It's accompanied by a picture of a gentleman in a bowler hat, Mr. Wayne Sivens, standing next to the Galton Valley pumping station. The photograph subtitled, "Wayne Sivens has helped at Galton Valley pumping station for 20 years. One of the most fascinating West Midlands canal attractions has opened its door to welcome visitors for Heritage Open Days 2025. Among the wonderful hidden gems taking part is the Galton Valley Pump House in Smethwick. Nestled close to Brasshouse Lane Bridge and beneath the road of the same name, passers-by new to the area can be forgiven for missing the small and pleasant visitor attraction on their doorsteps. Owned by the Canal and Rivers Trust, the Pump House is operated by Sandwell Council and manned by volunteers on behalf of Sandwell Museum Service, who greet visitor and host community groups and school trips. Among them is Wayne Sivens, who grew up in Darlaston, who has been helping out at the Smethwick site for more than 20 years. He said, "This particular building was built in 1892 to serve the two canals here. We're open today for a Heritage Open Day event to just bring the heritage of the canal in the Black Country to the people of the area. It's only operated until 1923, and then it was sort of decommissioned. We ended up rebuilding it. The museum station is situated between Birmingham New Main Line and the High Old Main Line Canal and is named after the industrialist and gun manufacturer Sam Galton. It was built with the purpose of pumping water to replace the water lost from the higher level when boats went through the Smethwick locks near Bridge Street. It tells the story of Galton Valley's canal system and the people that worked on it. Among the treats inside for visitors is a colourful furnished narrowboat, which was previously displayed at Walsall's former Burchill's Canal Museum in Old Burchill's, which closed in 2003. Mr. Sivens added, "This station was built to manage the water levels between the two canals. It's what's known as a recirculating pump. By the 1930s, the place was derelict. In 1999, a grant application was made to the European Development Fund to rebuild the chimney. The pump engine on display came from the northeast. Both boilers were built by Thompson's Boilers, which were based in Ettingshall. One of the boilers came from a Hartley's jam plant and the other from the old Smethwick Rolfe Street baths. There were two boilers installed to ensure that there was a standby. Some of the items on display were bought from Burchill's Canal Museum and some are from volunteer collections. There is a lot of local history connections to what we see here. The pumping house is open monthly on Saturdays from April to October from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It will next open on October the 11th. For more, contact 0121 556 0683 or museum_learning@sandwell.gov.uk. Crackdown on retail crime, dangerous drivers and antisocial behaviour. A police operation will focus on Sandwell, helping to crack down on retail crime, dangerous drivers and antisocial behaviour. Sandwell Police have said that the force's Operation Advance will return to the streets of Sandwell in a day of intensive action. The operation will see police travel around the streets of Sandwell addressing issues that matter the most to residents. As part of the action, extra police resources have been stationed around the region, with officers already being on the streets looking to address the public's concerns. Chief Superintendent Mark Maydill from Sandwell Police said, "Operation Advance sees staff and officers from every police department locally and across the force working together with partners to deliver 24 hours of intense police operations. After months of planning, we will be using all of those resources as an opportunity to tackle issues in the borough that matter most to you. If you see us out and about, feel free to come and chat to us and tell us about any issues, while also finding out more about the work happening in your area. To increase the impact in the area, Sandwell's police units have also been bolstered with specialist officers and staff from other departments." The force added, "Our existing Sandwell teams will be bolstered with specialist officers and staff from other departments to further act on issues impacting residents and businesses. While our focus is on Sandwell for one day, we will always make sure that we're there to help wherever you are in the West Midlands." Extra urgent dental appointments available for patients in region. Thousands of extra urgent dental appointments are now available for people living in the Black Country who need urgent dental care. As part of the government's rollout of 700,000 additional urgent dental appointments across the country, more than 14,000 appointments have been made available in the Black Country. These urgent appointments are for people experiencing serious dental problems such as severe toothache, persistent and intense pain that cannot be managed with over-the-counter painkillers, dental abscesses, uncontrolled bleeding, swelling, fractured, loose or displaced fillings causing pain, bleeding gums requiring urgent treatment for acute conditions, and other treatments may be available at the discretion of the dentist. The Black Country ICB has asked for people who need an urgent dental appointment to visit NHS 111 online or call 111 and ask that they do not contact their GP practice, as they will not be able to offer emergency or out-of-hours dental care. Saab Bassi, director of primary Black Country ICB, said, "These slots are specifically for urgent dental problems, and you don't need to be registered with an NHS dentist." Innovative hit list tackles waiting lists for surgery. An NHS trust has carried out the first robotic-assisted hit list in their region as an innovative way to reduce the number of patients waiting for treatment. Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust carried out the high-intensity theatre list, or hit list, on September the 6th for patients waiting for hernia and gallbladder surgery. Of the 8 patients operated on, 5 underwent robotic-assisted surgery, which is more than double the average number of robotic surgeries that are usually performed in a day. Physiotherapist Stephen Miller, 41, underwent a hernia repair. He said, "I was delighted to have been put on this list for surgery, as my hernia was quite uncomfortable at times and required management. I know surgery using robotics is becoming more common now, and in my field of work I know a lot of people who are familiar with this type of surgery, so I wasn't worried about it at all. The surgeries are carried out using a surgical robot, allowing for more precise surgery and leading to faster recovery times and reduced risks of infection. Both the theatre and surgery robot only require a short amount of time to set up between operations, and the next patient is prepared at the same time, maximising efficiency of the theatre and speeding up patient turnaround time." The surgery hit list was led by Mr. Rajiv Perivali, Consultant General and Colorectal Surgeon, who said, "By delivering weekend surgical lists, we can maximise the number of patients we can see and make significant improvements to waiting times. By combining this with robotic-assisted surgery, we are also meeting recommendations outlined in NHS England's 10-year health plan to utilise surgical robots within theatres." Man charged with assault following Unite the Kingdom protest. A man from Tipton has been charged in connection with disorder that broke out during protests in central London at the weekend. Lewis Sivens, aged 33, a farm away, was charged with assault on an emergency worker and bailed to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court on Wednesday, October the 1st. He was among 8 people who have been charged during the protests after around 150,000 people turned out for right-wing activist Tommy Robinson's Unite the Kingdom rally on Saturday. Another, around 5,000, were involved in an anti-racism counter-demonstration. The Metropolitan Police said there were several incidents of violent disorder, the majority of which were linked to the Unite the Kingdom event, and the 8 people were facing charges including assault and public order offences. Detective Chief Inspector Natalie Norris from the Met's Public Order Crime Team said, "Public order policing doesn't end when the event is over, and since Saturday our teams have been working to identify those involved in any criminal activity. Our post-event investigation is ongoing and police officers have trawled through hundreds of hours of CCTV footage and continue to review evidence."
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 19th of September. Shop theft suspect arrested in a minute. Officers in a Black Country town are delighted to announce that they arrested a shoplifting suspect in just 1 minute. Wensbury Town Police took to social media to announce they had made a swift arrest after responding to calls of a theft in progress at a shop. The West Midlands police officers said they were on scene within just 1 minute, arresting the suspect immediately. The team posted a picture online with the suspect's face concealed with an emoji. The post details and picture can be viewed on our website at expressandstar.com. Residents say late-night shops are now a health and safety risk. Written by Christian Barnett, local Democracy reporter. Several objections have been raised over plans to open a new off-licence, saying the rise in late-night shops has turned a high street into a health and safety risk. A meeting will be held to decide whether the new shop can open in Barewood Road, Barewood, Smethwick, following a number of complaints from neighbours. New off-licence would open in the former Twisty Pretzel Bakery next door to another off-licence, JM Shop, which opened last year. One objector said, smashed glass bottles, drug paraphernalia and human waste were making Bearwood Road a health and safety risk. The High Street has more than its fair share of establishments selling alcohol beverages and food, the objection said. We do not require any more. A number of objections have been raised against the plan for the shop, which would be open from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day, according to the application by Ali Ashorbig, which means a decision will have to be made by Sandor Council's licensing committee at a meeting in Albury on September 23rd. Another objector said there was no demonstrable need for another off-licence in Bearwood Road. The area is surrounded by many schools, the objection read. It is already subject to problems that place young people at risk. Adding late-night alcohol sales and vapes could normalise and attract further harmful behaviour. It is important to note that the immediate area already has multiple off-licences, with the nearest being next door. The saturation of such premises has not improved the area's condition. In fact, it has coincided with the rise in disorder, littering and nuisance behaviour. There is no demonstrable need for another outlet such as this on Bearwood Road. One resident living in nearby Wattis Road said they were increasingly concerned by the increase in late-night shops in Bearwood. Currently, the area already hosts four such establishments: Quincy's Market, The Bob Shop, JM Shop and Vape, and Eagle's Booze, all of which sell similar products and maintain similar storefronts. The cumulative impact of these shops has coincided with a notable increase in antisocial behaviour, including loitering, disturbances during late hours, and suspicious activity involving vehicles parked outside these premises. Alongside this article is a picture. It is captioned, "The former Twisty Pretzel in Bearwood Road, Bearwood, Smethwick." It is a building, an attached building, a brick with windows on the top floor and the bottom floor. One side is the JM shop. The other is a shop called Twisty Pretzel. The JM shop has a black storefront, blue lining, white writing. And Twisty Pretzel has a wooden storefront with Twisty Pretzel written in red bubble font. Both shops have their shutters down and you cannot see inside them. Teacher caught with indecent images and videos of children avoids prison. A Tipton teacher arrested at a Dudley school after being caught with indecent images and videos of children has avoided jail. Benjamin Woodvine, 32, was arrested after West Midlands Police Child Exploitation Team discovered he had uploaded indecent pictures of children on the internet. They raided Woodvine's Monis Avenue home and realised he was at work teaching in a Dudley school. They then arrested Woodvine on school premises and confiscated several electronic devices. His brother, who had been working in his home, also handed in a phone to the police. Woodvine had 9 Category A indecent images of child, which are the most disturbing images concerning age and sexual harm available. Police also found 14 Category B indecent images of children and 14 Category C images and 1 video. Woodvine admitted 6 counts of making indecent images of children between May 2023 and July 2024 at Dudley Magistrates Court and was sentenced at Wolverhampton Crown Court on Wednesday. Prosecuting Robert Ward said, West Midlands Police received information about a Kick account which had uploaded indecent images online. There was activity which linked the IP address to the defendant's address. They obtained a warrant and went to the address. Police arrived at the address on July 17th last year and there was no answer, so the officers entered the address and found several devices. They noticed paperwork which showed he was working at a school. They then went to the school and took him into a room and arrested him, and they took a device from him. He added, "The ages of the children in the images were 5 to 7 and 8 to 10. He told police he started exploring pornography when he was a teenager and began again a few years ago. He would talk to children online and denied any of them were from his school or assaulting any children. In mitigation, the court heard Woodvine had no previous convictions and had pleaded guilty at the first opportunity. In defence, Miss Shannon Keenan said he is ashamed at what he has done and has undertaken a course of therapy. Judge Sunil Khanna KC said, I am imposing a 3-year community order, which will include close supervision by the probation service, 30 rehabilitation days, and 200 hours of unpaid work. Woodvine was made the subject of a 5-year sexual harm prevention order and banned from working with children again. He was also ordered to pay £264 in costs. Police plea after cat burglar suspect held. Written by Adam Smith. Police are searching for the owner of a cat they believe was stolen by a shoplifting suspect in Wednesbury. Wednesbury Town Police officers arrested a man on Wednesday on suspicion of 2 shop thefts in Friar Park. The alleged thief was carrying a cat at that time. Along with a picture of the black and white cat, the team posted on social media, Wednesbury officers arrested a male this morning on suspicion of 2 shop thefts from the Friar Park area. The male also had the below cat in his possession. This wasn't his cat. Pet owners in the area are now being asked if they recognise the Moggy. The police team added, if anyone recognises the below cat, it is currently held at Hilltop Vets for Pets. The post attracted some cat-themed comments online, including one from Pete Woodcock, who replied on X, formerly Twitter, he was a cat burglar. Anyone with the information about the cat or the incident is asked to contact police on 101 or via the live chat page on the West Midlands Police website. Officers said the cat was being well looked after by the vets, but they were keen to find its right owner. Alongside this article is a picture of the cat. It is very close up and zoomed in. I think the cat is on a car seat or wrapped in a grey blanket or jumper, but the picture is very zoomed in on its face. It is a black cat with white fur running down its nose, white whiskers, and dark brown eyes. It's captioned, "Do you know who this cat belongs to? Police are looking to trace the owner of the black and white Moggy." Chief, apprehending rape suspects, absolute priority. Police investigation into traumatic racially motivated attack continuing at pace. Written by Matthew Cooper, Press Association. A top police officer has said her team is doing everything possible to bring those responsible for an alleged racially motivated rape of a Sikh woman to justice. Speaking at the scene of the attack, which happened on September 9th in the Tame Road area of Albury, Chief Superintendent Kib Mandil, Police Commander at Sandwell, yesterday urged anyone with information, doorbell or dashcam footage to come forward. The victim, reported to be a British-born Sikh aged in her 20s, told West Midlands police officers a racist remark was made to her during the sexual assault. The perpetrators allegedly told the woman, "You don't belong in this country, get out," as they sexually assaulted her between 8 a.m. and 8:30 a.m., the Sikh Federation UK said. A man in his 30s who was arrested on Sunday on suspicion of rape has been released on bail, pending further inquiries, West Midlands Police said on Wednesday. Miss Medill told the media the investigation is continuing at pace and said officers have been trawling hundreds of hours of CCTV. She said, "Our forensic specialists are also carrying out extensive inquiries. These will continue to be part of the investigation. We are working closely with key partners and keeping them as updated as we can. Whilst this is being treated as an isolated incident at this time, I understand the fear and concern this has caused our communities. Violence against women and girls is a key priority for me and my teams in Sandwell. Today I would like to take this opportunity to ask for the public's help to bring us the information about who has carried out this horrendous attack." If you have any dashcam or doorbell footage that you think would help the investigation, please submit this. Finally, I would like to reassure you we're doing everything possible to bring those responsible to justice on behalf of this young woman, and our investigation will not stop until the individuals responsible for this awful attack are put before the courts. The police chief reappealed for anyone who saw two white men in the area of the attack at the time. The first man is reported to have had a shaved head, a heavy build, and was wearing gloves and a dark-coloured sweatshirt, whilst the second was wearing a grey top with a silver zip. Miss Medill said it is her team's absolute priority to apprehend the suspects. She said, "We need to bring them to justice. We need to stop them if they were ever considering doing something like this again. It is the most important thing and our absolute priority. We need the public's help with that. It happened at around 8:30 a.m, but those offenders may have been around before that. If you have got dashcam footage in the hour or hour and a half before the incident or just after, please just have a little look and send it to us. We will judge whether it is important to the inquiry." Asked by the media how the victim was doing since the attack, the officer said, "She is doing as you would imagine. This is a horrific, traumatic incident and it will take her whole life to get over it. But we have got specialist support for her and we are helping her work through her feelings and the challenges she will experience over the next weeks and months." The attack happened against a backdrop of anti-immigration protests, rising tensions around the use of the hotels for asylum seekers and an increase in English and British flags being put up in the public. Preet Kaur Gill, the MP for Birmingham Edgbaston, was also at the scene yesterday morning and said the majority of those who don't want to celebrate being English don't want to divide and create hate. She said, "I think there is a minority who will abuse the flag and will use it for means to create division and hate. Anyone with useful information about what happened should contact the force via 101. Quoting log 798 of September 9th, or on the online portal at mip.mi.p.police.uk/operation/20HQ25C17-P01. Alongside this article is a picture of Superintendent Kim Medill. She is stood in a field or a woodland area, lots of grass and trees behind her. She is wearing her police uniform, so a high-vis yellow police jacket coat with a white shirt, black and white checkered necktie, her black police bowler hat with a black and white checker around the base of it. And she is looking towards the camera. People hold microphones in her face. We see the microphones at the forefront of the image. It's captioned, "Chief Superintendent Kim Medill, Policing Commander for Sandwell, speaks about the racially aggravated attack."
Hello, this is Sarbjit with your news from the Express and Star, Saturday the 20th of September. MEPM making encouraging strides in his bid to catch up. By Lewis Cox. New Albion recruit Chris MEPM admitted a late window free-for-all left him playing catch-up when checking into the Hawthorns. Central defender MEPM, age 27, has settled into his new surroundings admirably. Following the £1 million move from Premier League Bournemouth, Wales international MEPM, a two-time championship promotion winner, wasted little time making an impression with the Baggies as Ryan Mason immediately introduced him to the starting lineup in the wake of Torbjörn Hegum's sale to Bologna. The former Cherries stopper caught the eye with a classy debut in the 1-0 win at Stoke last month, just days after signing. He was similarly assured despite Derby's late smash and grab last weekend. It was a season of relative unknown last term for MEPM, followed by a summer of uncertainty. In the final year of his contract with Bournemouth, the defender excelled on loan at Sunderland in helping the Black Cats win promotion to the Premier League after which his parent club opted to take out the 12-month option in MEPM's deal to protect their asset. There were talks with several interested parties all summer, but things really clicked into gear in August when Ryan Mason and the Albion hierarchy outlined their plans for the Welshman. "It was quite late, to be honest with you," MEPM said. "There was a lot of different conversations with clubs, and from the start of the window to the end, there was different clubs being mentioned and stuff like that. I think, ultimately, clubs kind of wait, and you look at last week in the window, and it suddenly just goes into a free-for-all. I think I kind of knew that was going to be the case, but it was probably going to happen a little bit later than what ideally I would have liked. I think when you know you're joining a club, I think the sooner you do it, the better, just so you can give yourself time to settle in off the pitch and do a pre-season with a club and get your fitness. Obviously, I didn't really play a lot of minutes pre-season, so something like that can be difficult. But then I had a phone call with the manager and West Brom, and the senior people made it clear that they felt that I was the perfect player to come in and help the team. Like I said, obviously it's a big club anyway, so you're aware of that. I think all the pieces finally came together towards the end." MEPM had lost his place in the Cherries backline to star duo Dean Howson and Ilya Zabani, who moved to Real Madrid and PSG respectively this summer. The Albion defender, a regular for his nation for several years, clocked up a 50th cap in the recent World Cup qualifying success in Kazakhstan. "It's one of the proudest moments for me," added London-born MEPM, who qualifies through his paternal grandmother. "I think I've been very fortunate to have played a lot of games for Wales and played in some really big World Cup games and Euro games." SVR unveils restored 1920s coach as fully accessible buffet and saloon car. By Megan Jones. There are several pictures. There is a picture of Elaine Harrington, the first passenger to try out the newly refurbished carriage. There is a picture of the toilets in the carriage, which have been designed for wheelchairs. The picture of dozens of volunteers who helped transform the 1928 coach into a fully accessible buffet and saloon car. There is a picture of first customers Elaine and Richard Harrington. It is hoped the project will inspire others. The Severn Valley Railway has unveiled a newly restored 1928 carriage that has been transformed into a fully accessible buffet and saloon car following an ambitious 8-year project. The coach, which was originally built in 1928, spent its first 30 years as a run-of-the-mill third-class compartment coach before being converted into a mess coach and workshop. In 1981, it was bought by the SVR-based 2587 Society and used as a base for the restoration of its locomotive. After the project was completed, the coach became the foundation of the ambitious SVR scheme to create a wheelchair-accessible saloon and buffet car. It is now being hoped that the project at Severn Valley Railway proves an inspiration to other coach restorers across the heritage sector. Work, which included building new body sides due to extensive issues of rot, began in 2017 at Bewdley. During the project, the coach's historic original features were combined with modern adaptations, including a Great Western Railway, known as GWR, Art Deco-styled bar, which features a low-level section designed for wheelchair access and a fully accessible toilet with outward opening doors. The restoration was led by the SVR's LNER carriage group, with volunteer Richard Gunning at the helm. He said, "We didn't just want to rebuild it as an accessible coach. We wanted to make it authentically appealing, practical and welcoming." The carriage features two main areas, a buffet bar and a saloon, both with integrated wheelchair spaces. It's heated by steam pipes concealed behind refurbished original GWR covers. Talking about the project, one of the team of volunteers, Simon Marshall, said, "We were amazed to discover some original covers hidden away in our store of things that might come in useful one day. They complement the decor perfectly. The buffet bar itself was inspired by the GWR Quick Lunch Bar concept." And he added, "Every detail, from the green fan pattern upholstery to low-level emergency stop pulls, was designed with both accessibility and authenticity in mind." Now, after COVID pandemic delays and many unexpected repairs and challenges, the team has finally completed work on the coach, which officially went into service on Thursday. The restoration of the coach was funded by the SVR Charitable Trust. Trust Chair Judith Meredith said, "This is a perfect example of blending modern-day needs with heritage authenticity. The Trust is very pleased to have played its part in helping to provide a coach that meets all the needs of more of our wonderful passengers. It has been finished to the Seven Valleys Very High Coach Work Standards, using the skills and ingenuity of many hands over the years. We know that this beautifully designed coach is going to give a wonderful experience to all those who use it." And she added, "Thank you to the many people and organisations that have donated money and time to this wonderful project." SVR Managing Director Jonathan Gus Dunster added, "This superb accessible buffet and saloon car further boosts the SVR's already impressive range of accessible coaches. For some time now, we've been working towards running every service with accommodation for wheelchair and mobility aid users, and the conversion of GWR 9581 takes us much closer to this being achieved. We are so grateful to every single team member who has given their time and skills to complete this groundbreaking project, and to the SVR Charitable Trust for funding the costs of the restoration." And he went on, "It's another great example of the Severn Valley Railway leading the way for the heritage sector. GWR 9581 has been 8 long years in the making, and we hope it will set a new benchmark, not just for SVR, but for the heritage railways everywhere. Clad in gleaming GWR chocolate and cream, the coach ran on the 11:45 a.m. service from Kidderminster to Bridge North on the first day of the SVR's Autumn Steam Gala. The SVR runs heritage services between Bridge North and Kidderminster." Councillor who went on London March resigns from party. A Walsall councillor who attended Tommy Robinson's march last weekend in London has resigned from the Conservative Party. Councillor Jade Chapman, ward member for Rushall Shelfield, announced her resignation on Thursday. She said a formal grievance that was submitted to the party, which detailed persistent bullying from a fellow councillor, had not been acted on. Councillor Chapman said that, by stark contrast, when a complaint was made against her attending the Tommy Robinson march in London on September 13, the party acted on it immediately. She said the inconsistency has led her to believe the party's processes are applied selectively and unfairly. Speaking to the local Democracy Reporting Service, she said, "Resigning from the Conservative Party has not been an easy decision. In fact, it's one I had hoped I would never have to make. But recent events have made it impossible for me to continue under its banner with integrity." Over 20 illegal worker suspects held in government crackdown. Inquiries now taking place to identify liable employers who could face penalties. By Deborah Hardiman, Chief Reporter. More than 20 people who were allegedly working illegally in Oldbury and Wolverhampton have been arrested by immigration enforcement officers as part of the government's zero-tolerance approach. The Home Office said that officers acting on tip-offs made the arrests on Wednesday after a string of visits including to construction premises. There were a total of 21 arrests, 12 individuals detained for deportation, and 2 civil penalty referral notices issued to businesses. Further inquiries will now take place to identify the liable employers who could face substantial civil penalties if found to have employed illegal workers and failed to conduct relevant pre-employment checks. At Powder Coating WM in Ash Street in Bradley, Bilston, officers arrested 9 men of Indian nationality for offences including working in breach of visa conditions and overstaying visas. Subsequent house searches led to the arrest of 2 further men for overstaying their visas. 7 individuals were detained as a result pending their removal from the UK. At Triple Warm Sealed Units in Dudley Road East in Albury, 2 men of Indian nationality were arrested for working in breach of visa conditions and illegal entry to the UK. Searches at residential addresses identified 4 further men of Indian nationality who were arrested for illegal entry to the UK, overstaying their visa and working in breach of their visa conditions. All 4 were detained pending their removal from the UK. An arrest was later made at SS Concrete Mix Limited on Price Street in Bilston of an Indian man who had overstayed his visa. 3 further arrests were made at residential addresses in Smethwick, including 2 men and 1 woman, all Indian nationality, for overstaying their visa. 1 man was detained pending his removal from the UK. Mark Andrews takes a wry look at this week's news. Ever wondered if the person sitting next to you on the bus, train or tram is up to no good? Wondered what they are fidgeting with inside their thick coat on a hot day? Well, it seems there's a scam going on, where thieves steal contactless card machines out of shops and use them to scam money out of the bank card you have in your wallet. A couple of weeks ago, it appears one such criminal tried to swipe the card machine from Carver's Building Supplies in Wolverhampton. 2 of the store's staff gave chase, wrestling the thief to the ground and detaining him for more than half an hour while they waited for the old bill to turn up. What happened next is truly remarkable. Did the officers thank the shop staff for preventing a serious crime that could have potentially seen dozens of people fleeced out of their hard-earned cash? Is the thief in custody, awaiting a reasonable, hefty sentence? Well, no. They let him go. The store's boss, Shropshire businessman Henry Carver, says his staff feel let down by the response. I'll bet. Police say they agreed the matter should be dealt with by a community resolution order. Oh, pull the other one. I find it extremely hard to believe 2 shop assistants, having put their own safety on the line to detain a thief, would then say, I think this matter would be best dealt with by a community resolution order. Indeed, I'd be surprised if they had even heard of a community resolution order. I hadn't until a few years ago. I think they were encouraged to take this route. Community resolution orders were introduced as a way of dealing with minor offences without the need of going through the criminal justice system. Officers suggest the offender can avoid prosecution if he performs some kind of forfeit. But given that most of our police stations are now closed, that option is somewhat limited. On this occasion, it appears the penalty was that the thief would not be allowed to return to Carver's. I suspect these orders are becoming much more commonplace and probably explain why police forces continually claim to be solving more crimes, when this does not match up to the public's experience. As I see it, in this case, the police did not solve anything. They simply handed a get-out-of-jail-free card to a serious offender.
Hello, this is Jenny. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday, the 22nd of September. Highways chiefs are proposing to install a series of speed humps along a Wensborough street to improve road safety. A Samwell Council public notice states that a consultation exercise was in hand. The council proposes to construct a set of speed cushions to reduce the speed of vehicles at the following location: Friar Park Road. Full details may be examined at the council house in Freeth Street, Oldbury, during normal office hours and online via samwell.gov.uk. Objections should be made by emailing joven_sandu@sandwell.gov.uk by October the 6th. Climate change blamed for dozens of deaths in the region. Study finds that 52 people died this year due to hotter than normal temperatures. An article by Mark Andrews. Dozens of people across the West Midlands have died as a result of climate change, says experts. A new study by the world-renowned Imperial College London found that 52 people died this year as a result of hotter than normal temperatures. Dudley saw a total of 23 estimated heat-related deaths over the summer, with 14 caused by climate change. Wolverhampton also saw 14 deaths. Walsall experienced a total of 17 heat-related deaths, with 11 of those caused by climate change. Sandwell saw 16 deaths, with 10 being attributed to rising temperatures. Telford and Wrekin saw 5 heat deaths, 3 caused by climate change. Sam Fraser-Baxter of the college's Grantham Institute said the figure showed how serious the problem was becoming. This means in a world that hasn't been heated by the burning of fossil fuels and deforestation, there would have been 52 fewer heat-related deaths this summer in these 5 areas, he said. Birmingham experienced 54 heat-related deaths across the summer, he said. The UK experienced its hottest summer on record this year, with experts saying extreme heat incidents were made more likely and more intense by human-induced global warming. The Imperial College London study used modelling, historical mortality records and peer-reviewed methods to provide early estimations of fatalities this summer. The team found climate change, caused primarily by the burning of fossil fuels and deforestation, increased temperatures by an average of 2.2 degrees Celsius, but by as much as 3.6 degrees Celsius between June and August. The heat was responsible for 68% of the 24,400 total heat deaths in 854 European cities or areas over the 3 months, according to its analysis. This amounts to an additional 16,500 lives lost, compared to what may have been seen during a summer not heated by human activities, including 835 deaths in Rome, 630 in Athens, 409 in Paris, and 387 in Madrid, it found. For the UK, there were 315 deaths in London, 24 in Glasgow and Sheffield, and 22 in Edinburgh. The study found the elderly were most vulnerable during the hot months, with 85% of those who died being over 65 and 41% being over 85. It also found that just 2 or 3 degrees made a big impact on death rates when people were not familiar with the higher temperatures. Claire Barnes, a researcher who worked on the project, said, "It may not sound like much, but our study shows that shifts in summer heat of just a few degrees can be the difference between life and death for thousands of people. It is another reminder that climate change isn't an issue we can just deal with at some point in the future. The longer it takes the governments to shift away from fossil fuels and cut emissions, the deadlier summer heat will become, even with efforts to become more resilient to extreme temperatures." Mayor wants Midlands to be centre for creative industries. More funding announced to develop new TV and film projects across the region. An article by Beverly Rademacher, business editor. The Mayor of the West Midlands has announced more funding for the region's creative industries to develop new ideas for TV, film and online platforms. The West Midlands IP Fund will open for a second round of applications later this month, with grants of up to £20,000 available. It follows the announcement that 1970s children's classic Bagpuss is to be revived in a new live-action and animated musical adventure, created by Birmingham-based Three Wise Entertainment. A new BBC drama, The Hairdresser Mysteries, is to be filmed locally in the West Midlands. They are among five TV series and three films commissioned after being developed by production companies, with funding from the West Midlands Combined Authority, the WMCA, Create Central and Creative UK. The digital and creative industries feature in the Mayor's growth plan. Richard Parker, Mayor of the West Midlands, said, "Our IP fund is bringing Bagpuss back and won a BBC commission for a new daytime drama. That's the success I want for our local talent." Backing up the BBC's commitment, the WMCA's IP fund will help make local filmmakers and producers like Shay Chumba from Wolverhampton and Anton Inwood from Birmingham to develop new on-screen ideas. They run the Birmingham-based independent studio, Acclaim Content, and secured their first commission thanks to support through Create Central. Their 30-minute documentary, Queen of Trucks, followed Shannon Patterson as she ran a HGV driving school in Willenhall, with a goal of getting young people into careers behind the steering wheel. To register an interest in the fund, go to the Creative UK website. Revamp of Hospital for Mental Health Service is completed. Black Country Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust has announced the completion of a £30 million investment at Edward Street Hospital in West Bromwich. Final preparations are now underway for the hospital's reopening in October, bringing high-quality, modern care to older adult patients. This redevelopment forms part of a national programme to eliminate dormitory-style wards across the mental health facilities, ensuring patients benefit from greater privacy, dignity and improved therapeutic environments. At Edward Street Hospital, all dormitory accommodation has been replaced with modern ensuite bedrooms and upgraded facilities. These enhancements are designed to support recovery while providing a safe, comfortable environment for both patients and staff. Patients were temporarily transferred to Bushy Fields Hospital in Dudley in September 2023 to continue their care. All patients and staff from the older adults wards at Bushy Fields will relocate to Edward Street Hospital once it reopens. An official opening ceremony took place on September the 18th. When the Trust welcomed partners, staff and members of the local community to celebrate this important milestone. Chris Massicane, Chief Operating Officer at Black Country Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We are incredibly proud to have reached this milestone and are excited to welcome patients back to Edward Street Hospital. This major capital development is about creating a safe, modern and therapeutic environment where older adults can receive the very best care, with dignity and privacy at the centre." Sophie Ray, Associate Director of Estates at Black Country Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust, also added, "We would particularly like to thank our partners who were involved in this project. IHP, our principal supply chain partner, Archus, our consultancy partner, and WT Partnership, our cost advisors. We also extend our heartfelt thanks to everyone who contributed to make this transformation possible for our patients and their families." Edward Street Hospital's reopening in October 2025 marks a new chapter in specialist mental health support for older adults across Sandwell and the wider Black Country community. Villa and Albion call games off after tragic loss. Villa and Albion's women's side both postponed their matches yesterday following the tragic passing of Matt Beard. The former Liverpool and Burnley manager died on Saturday, aged 47, and the football community has been mourning his loss. Beard led Liverpool to back-to-back Women's Super League titles in 2013 and 2014, and returned to the club for a second spell in 2021, before being sacked in February this year. Villa were due to play Liverpool, but the two clubs agreed to postpone the fixture following Beard's sad death. A statement from Villa read, "Following the tragic death of former Liverpool women head coach Matt Beard last night, Liverpool's players were rightly offered the opportunity to postpone today's Barclays WSL fixture. We apologise to fans for the late notice and inevitable inconvenience, but would ask for understanding at this sad time. Meanwhile, our thoughts and condolences remain with Matt's family. Albion were due to play Burnley, but they have also agreed to postpone their match." Their club statement reads, "Everyone at West Bromwich Albion Football Club sends their condolences to Matt's loved ones at this desperately sad time."
Hi, this is Kate and I'm reading you some articles from the Express and Star, dated the 23rd of September. Boston Business Campaign to Improve the Region's Fortunes. A new campaign to boost the fortunes of the Black Country has been unveiled today with the promise of changing perceptions and increasing economic performance. Boston Black Country Business, which has been created by the Black Country Chamber of Commerce, aims to showcase the strengths of the region by championing its most innovative, resilient, creative and globally trading companies. The Magnificent Seven chose to tell their story. First includes KMB, Shipping Group, manufacturer Bowers and Jones, Apprentice Training Specialists, Income Training, and Health Cash Plan Provider Paycare. There are also places for creative agency TPS Squared, Beacon Centre for the Blind, and Dudley Canal and Caverns, which hosted the launch event and the photo shoot. All organisations have agreed to display the Boston Black Country Business Badge designed by Stourbridge's Plums Ideas and have committed to support Chamber's events and media opportunities using their tales of business success to promote a unique skills and capabilities of the region in industry, technology, digital, finance and in tourism. Sarah Morehouse, CEO of Black Country Chamber of Commerce, said, "We're always looking at ways to promote the strengths of our area and celebrating the brilliant companies and entrepreneurs that are based here. Boston is a word unique to the Black Country and sums up a thing that's brilliant. This got us thinking. Let's approach some of our very best businesses and see if we can get them on board for an official campaign that showcases what makes the Black Country so special." Nearly 450,000 people in total are employed across 42,395 enterprises in the Black Country, with strong concentrations of manufacturers, transport and logistics specialists, construction firms and retailers and wholesalers. Sarah added, "Manchester is the B, Birmingham the Bull. We want the Boston badge to become our icon. There's so much potential in our region and we want to do everything that we can to kickstart economic growth by leveraging our traditional strengths whilst embracing new and emerging sectors." And this article is supported by a photograph of a number of people in a barge sailing down the canals. It's of Paul Hull from KMB Shipping Group, Gareth Jones from Income Training, Paul Crofts from Dudley Canal and Caverns, Sarah Morehouse from the Black Country Chamber of Commerce, Jane Somerville from Bowers and Jones, Anthony Burns from Paycare, Carolyn Smith to TP Squared, and Lisa Cowley from Beacon Centre for the Blind. Charity marks momentous milestone with a wonderful beacon of light ball. The Beacon Centre for the Blind marked a historic milestone with its spectacular beacon of light ball as it celebrates 150 years of supporting people with sight loss. Guests were treated to a night of fine dining and entertainment, coming together to celebrate Beacon's achievements since 1875 while raising vital funds to continue its work empowering people living with sight loss. The event took place on Friday, September the 19th, at Parkhall Hotel, Wolverhampton, and was hosted by broadcaster Dickie Dodd. The evening featured an inspiring keynote speech from Darren Harris, former Beacon beneficiary and England's most capped blind footballer, who hails from Wolverhampton. Cathy Roper, Chair of Trustees for Beacon, introduced a special Beacon video and thanked all of the wonderful guests for their support. Local businesses and corporate supporters took part, demonstrating strong community commitment to Beacon's mission and their wider West Midlands. Lisa Cowley, Chief Executive of the Beacon Centre, said, "Our Beacon of Light Ball was truly an unforgettable way to celebrate 150 years of supporting people with sight loss. The generosity of our guests and local businesses will make a real difference to our work, helping us continue to empower individuals and innovate in sight loss support for years to come. We have so enjoyed marking this momentous milestone with our staff, volunteers and beneficiaries throughout 2025. And this article is supported by lots of different photographs of four gentlemen, young men, and a row of four ladies behind them. They are general guests of the 150th anniversary celebrations for the Beacon Centre. You've got Cathy Roper. She's standing at the front of the stage with a microphone, and she's the Chair of Trustees. You've also got other guests at the charity event. There's a gentleman with his partner or friend and also his guide dog with him as well. Also a photograph of Richard Hobbs and Lorna Taylor as they take a selfie. We've got a lovely picture of the room and it shows how it was all decorated with round tables and balloons and flower arrangements on the tables. And then we've got a photograph of Dickie Dodd, who's joking around with the Paralympian and footballer Darren Harris. Two suspected drug dealers to face Crown Court. Two suspected drug dealers have appeared in court charged with drug offences. Andrew Graham, aged 32, of Birmingham, has been charged with possession with intent to supply Class A and Class B drugs and acquiring criminal property. The charges come after the police recovered an amount of drugs and a sum of cash following a foot chase near Winmore Lane in Smethwick just before 9 p.m. on Thursday, September the 18th. A spokesperson for West Midlands Police said, "In a separate incident on the same day, Mohammed Khan, aged 43, of Wensbury, was charged with possession of intent to supply Class A drugs after officers recovered quantity of Class B drugs. These charges come after officers from West Midlands Police stopped a vehicle on West Bromwich High Street at around 1 p.m, where following a search, a quantity of cannabis was seized. Both men appeared in magistrate courts over the weekend and will next appear at Crown Court." A West Midlands spokesperson said, "Two suspected drug dealers have been charged. Both men appeared at magistrate courts over the weekend and have been remanded in custody to next appear at Wolverhampton Crown Court next month." Shocking new statistics reveal state of children's tooth decay and obesity. 2 in 5 year 6 children in parts of the Black Country suffer from tooth decay, recent estimates show. New analysis by the Food Foundation has revealed shocking health and dietary inequalities across England, with dental decay, obesity, diabetes and shorter life expectancy afflicting deprived constituencies. The charity called the government to target action where it's needed most after Keir Starmer pledged to create the healthiest and happiest generation of children ever ahead of last year's elections. Funded by the Nuffield Foundation using government data and calculated by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, the Food Foundation's new health and diet inequalities dashboard includes updated estimates of the health status of people across the country. It estimates 39.4% of Year 6 children in Wolverhampton West had tooth decay in 2022, while the average stood at 10.6% in England. Whereas only 1.48% of Year 6 children suffered from decay in affluent Brighton, Kemp Town and Peacehaven, Brighton Pavilion and Hove and Portslade constituencies in the South East. Other health indicators in the Black Country also show a worrying trend. Statistics show that 31% of Year 6 children were living with obesity in Smethwick and West Bromwich, and 30.2% in Wolverhampton West, compared to just 11.3% in St Albans in the east of England. Dr Hannah Brinsden, Head of Policy and Advocacy at the Food Foundation, said that the new health and diet inequalities dashboard highlights stark inequalities across the country, as well as the detrimental impact that our food system is having on our health. Paul McDonald, Chief Campaigns Officer at Health Equals, said, "If the government is serious about tackling health inequalities, they need to take urgent action on food insecurity." Reacting to the figures, the Department of Health and Social Care spokesperson said, "We're launching the world's first partnership with the food retailers and manufacturers to help families make healthier choices. We're also rolling out supervised teeth brushing for 3 to 5 year olds in the most deprived communities and have already begun a rollout of 700,000 extra urgent dental appointments." Council overruled on rejection of contentious children's home. Conversion plan to finally go ahead after decision by government inspector. A plan to open a children's home has been given the go-ahead by a government inspector. The move to convert the home in Pool House Road, Great Barr, into a residential home for 2 children with emotional and behavioural difficulties was rejected by Samwell councillors early this year over the potential for more noise and disruption and parking problems in the neighbourhood. More than 50 neighbours had objected to the planning application before it was eventually turned down by Samwell Council's planning committee in February. However, the contentious plans have now been given the thumbs up by a government planning inspector overruling Samwell Council's decision. The inspector said the children's home would not cause any more noise or disturbance than a family home and would not cause any parking problems. In the report, the inspector said there's no compelling evidence that the use of the property or its external garden spaces for the care of children with emotional and behavioural difficulties would result in disturbance, which would be out of keeping with what we could normally and reasonably be expected of a domestic family residence. A decision was delayed in January to allow councillors to visit the 3-bedroom home near the M6 on the Black Country Birmingham border before making a final ruling. The objectors said converting the house into a children's home for 2 children and up to 3 staff would bring more noise, parking problems and a potential rise in antisocial behaviour. The row continued in February, where councillors met again to discuss the application, with the committee eventually rejecting the proposals after the hour-long debate. Several residents of Pool House Road said the neighbourhood was unsuitable for a children's home.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Diane welcoming you to your audio-described TV programmes starting Saturday, 27th of September and ending Friday, 3rd of October, 2025, which has been written by Christine. So, starting with Saturday, Channel 4 has 2 episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond at 7.55 and 8.20, a double helping of Frasier at 8.55 and 9.25, and 2 episodes of The Simpsons at 9.55 and 10.25. Other morning options include Japan's Northern Wilderness at 11.10 on BBC Two, featuring naturalist Steve Backshall and Olympic gold medalist Helen Glover, and Rick Stein's Cornwall is on at 11.30 on BBC One. In the afternoon, there is a new series on ITV with chef Ainsley Harriet, Ainsley's Good Mood Food, at 12.40. And on ITV, there are 2 film choices, Missing Link at 1pm on BBC One and How the West Was Won, a classic, at 2pm on BBC Two. Channel 4 has Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It at 3.35, Worst House on the Street at 4.35 and Jamie Oliver's What to Eat This Week at 5.40. Nature documentary H is for Hawk is on BBC Two at 5.30, followed by Michael Portillo's 200 Years of the Railways at 6.30, David Attenborough's Deep Ocean at 7.35, and Secrets of the Jurassic Dinosaurs at 8.25. Other evening choices include Stephen Mulhern's You Bet on ITV at 6, Strictly at 6.55 on BBC One, and Mysteries of Sinkholes at 7.10 on Channel 4. Action comedy Kingsman: The Secret Service is on Channel 4 at 9, whilst BBC One has the start of a new series, Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue, at 9.25. This follows nine people who survive a plane crash in a jungle, unaware that a murderer is among them. Oscar-winning thriller Joker is on ITV at 9.50, and on Channel 4 at 11.35, music documentary Oasis Supersonic follows the Gallagher brothers' rise to superstardom in the 1990s. Now for Sunday. Double helpings of Everybody Loves Raymond from 8.05, Frasier from 9 and The Simpsons from 1 are offered on Channel 4. Fern Britton goes Inside the Vets at 11.25 on ITV, followed by You Bet at 1.10pm, whilst over on Channel 4 it's The Doghouse at 1.55, and on BBC One, Angela Barnes presents an appeal on behalf of cancer charity Sarcoma UK at 2.15pm. You have Attenborough and the Giant Sea Monster at 4.50 on BBC One, The Great British Bake Off on Channel 4 at 5.50, and M&S Dress the Nation at 6.55 on ITV. Film fans have a few choices on Sunday. Spy comedy Johnny English is at 2.15 on ITV, The Sound of Music at 4.35 on BBC Two, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban at 3.55 on ITV, and the late night drama Father Stew at 11.20 on Channel 4. Evening choices also include BBC Two's Saving Lives at Sea at 7.20, followed by Eva Longoria Searching for Spain at 8.20, and the wonderful Rob and Ryland's Passage to India at 9pm. ITV has Beat the Chasers at 8, followed by the first of a five-part thriller series, Cold Water, at 9, whilst over on BBC One, Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams is at 8.15, followed by King and Conqueror at 9.15. Channel 4 gives you Educating Yorkshire at 8pm, The Disappearance of Jay Slater at 9pm, and the documentary Catching My Stalker at 10.20. And then your evening choices conclude with Heathrow, Britain's busiest airport, at 11.40 on ITV. Now for the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday. Channel 4 kicks off at 6.30am with a triple helping of The King of Queens, followed at 7.45 by Everybody Loves Raymond, and then from 9.10, four episodes of Frasier. In the afternoon, there's Car SOS at 1.10pm on Channel 4, Dickinson's Real Deal at 2pm on ITV, and, except for Friday, Amanda and Alan's Italian Job at 2.30 on BBC One. The regular soap slots are Emmerdale at 7.30 on ITV, EastEnders at 7.30 on BBC One every weeknight excepting Friday, and Coronation Street at 8 o'clock on Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Now for Monday. In the morning, BBC One offers the series SAS Catching the Criminals at 10.45, and in the afternoon there's Wild West, America's Great Frontier at 4.15 on BBC Two. Your evening choices include Jamie's Air Fryer Meals at 8pm on Channel 4, followed by a two-part series about Lucy Letby, Murder or Mistake, from 9 o'clock. Also at 9, over on ITV, it's the final episode of the thriller Cold Water, the start of a new series of Blue Lights on BBC One and Secrets of the Brain on BBC Two. On BBC Two at 10, Philomena Kunk looks at the earliest achievements of human civilization in the first of a five-part comedy series, Kunk on Earth. BBC One has two episodes of Trying from 10.40, and Channel 4 gives you 24 hours in A&E at 11.05. Now for Tuesday. Wild West, America's Great Frontier is on BBC Two at 4.15, Then it's into the evening choices, starting at 7 on BBC Two with Nigella at my table. At 8 o'clock, you can choose from Stacey and Joe on BBC One, Digging for Britain on BBC Two, and The Great British Bake Off on Channel 4. At 9, you have Waterloo Road on BBC One with a further episode at 10:40. Over on ITV at 9, True Crime Presents A Fight for Justice features journalist Satish Sekhar's mission to clear three men wrongly imprisoned for the murder of Lynette White in 1988. Taylor, a documentary charting Taylor Swift's rise to fame, is on Channel 4. The two-parter starts at 9:15, followed by Gogglebox at 11:15. Long Lost Family is on ITV at 10:45. Rob and Ryland's Passage to India draws to a close on BBC Two at 11, and it's the final episode of Stranded on Honeymoon Island at 11:40 on BBC One. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. Bargain Hunt is in Oswestry at 6:15 a.m. on BBC Two and Stirling Castle at 12:15 on BBC One, with Holmes Under the Hammer at 7 a.m. on BBC Two. After Wild West, America's Great Frontier at 4:15 on BBC Two, it's into the evening with Paul Merton's Grand Tour of Scotland's Rivers at 7:30 on BBC Two, Location, Location, Location at 8 on Channel 4, and The Repair Shop at 8 on BBC One. Your 9 o'clock choices are Wilderness with Simon Reeve on BBC Two, Episode 2 of The Hack on ITV, and a new series of Grand Designs on Channel 4. Channel 4 also had Gogglebox at 10, followed by Celebrity Gogglebox at 11, whilst on BBC Two at 10, there is Inside Number 9, and Eva Longoria is Searching for Spain again at 11:30. Film fans could enjoy Olympus Has Fallen at 10:50 on ITV, which has a disgraced former bodyguard to the US president getting the chance to redeem himself when he is trapped inside the White House following a terrorist attack. Now on to Thursday. In the morning, you can Escape to the Country at 6:15, followed by Holmes Under the Hammer at 7 and Sign Zone Gardener's World at 8, all on BBC Two, and Bargain Hunt is at 12:15 on BBC One. Evening options start at 8 with Dragon's Den on BBC One, Saving Lives at Sea on BBC Two, and a new series, George Clark's Homes in the Wild, on Channel 4, featuring some of the hundreds of islands dotted off the coasts of New Zealand and Australia. At 9, you have Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne Coming Home on BBC One, a documentary following the final 3 years of the late rock star's life. Also, the start of a new series, The Witch Hunts, Lucy Worsley Investigates on BBC Two, Long Lost Family on ITV, and Taskmaster on Channel 4. The Great British Bake Off is on Channel 4 at 10, whilst over on BBC Two, it's the final episode of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing. Spy thriller Mission Impossible 2 completes your evening choices at 10:45 on ITV. Finally, on to Friday. Holmes Under the Hammer is at 7 a.m. on BBC Two and 11:15 on BBC One, whilst Michael Portillo's 200 Years of Railways is on Sign Zone at 8 on BBC Two. In the afternoon, you have Sister Boniface Mysteries at 2 on BBC One and Mountain Gorilla at 4:15 on BBC Two. Wild Swimming in Scotland is the subject of a new series, Jules and Greg's Wild Swim, which starts at 7:30 on BBC Two. On Channel 4 at 8, it's The Great British Bake Off, An Extra Slice, whilst over on BBC One, you have DIY SOS. Your 9 o'clock choices include the romantic comedy drama Rye Lane on BBC Two and Gogglebox on Channel 4, with a new series of How Are You? It's Alan Partridge, starting at 9:30 on BBC One. Mitchell and Webb Are Not Helping is at 10 on Channel 4, and your evening options for today conclude with action fantasy film Highlander at 11 on BBC Two. That's it for this week. We do hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week.
Hello, I'm David, and here are some radio highlights for this coming week that I hope you'll enjoy listening to. First, on Saturday the 27th of September, today marks the 200th anniversary of the birth of modern railways, and Petroc Trelawney marks the occasion by taking an 8-hour and 581-mile journey from Inverness to London aboard the Highland Chieftain, with interviews and celebrations along the way. Train Tracks is on Radio 3 from 7:30 a.m. all day until 5 p.m. Another anniversary this week, the actress Julie Andrews will be 90 on Wednesday, and both Radio 2 and Radio 4 Extra mark both this and the 60th anniversary of her film, The Sound of Music. Stage and Screen is on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m, followed by The Hills Are Alive, also on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. In The Forum on BBC World Service, Izzy Lawrence investigates how weddings have changed over time. The Forum is on BBC World Service at 5 past midday. And for a classic comedy episode from 1960, Beyond Our Ken is on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 p.m. And for the Night Owls, more of Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews, the fan's story, is on Radio 2 at midnight. And then Sunday, the 28th of September. Sunday worship this morning is a harvest service from Lichfield Cathedral. You can join in Sunday worship on Radio 4 at 8:10 a.m. Actor Michael Sheen is Lauren Laverne's guest on Desert Island Discs on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, repeated on Friday at 9 a.m. In Private Passions, Michael Barclay welcomes actor Richard Armitage, exploring the many roles he has played. Private Passions is on Radio 3 at midday. Choral Evensong today comes from Westminster Abbey and marks the 80th birthday of composer John Rutter. Choral Evensong is on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. A Short History of Tractors in Ukrainian, the first episode of a two-part dramatisation of Marina Lewiska's novel, is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And Vintage Comedy from 1975 with Frankie Howard is on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. The social and cultural resonances of the pop group Kraftwerk's 1974 studio album Autobahn is in Driving, Driving, Driving on the Autobahn at 7:15 p.m. on Radio 4. And now for some programmes that are broadcast each weekday at the same time. This week's Book of the Week is Dangerous Miracle by biologist Liam Shaw, tracing the discovery, development and global use of antibiotics. Book of the Week, Dangerous Miracle, is on Radio 4 each morning at 11:45. Food Britannia is a series of 5 episodes where Max Cotton explores whether people in the UK could feed themselves entirely from homegrown produce. Food Britannia is on Radio 4 each afternoon at 1:45. Composer of the Week this week is Hector Berlioz, and you can hear 5 episodes covering his work. Composer of the Week is on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. each afternoon. This week's Book at Bedtime is the final 5 parts of Philip Roth's modern classic, The Plot Against America. Book at Bedtime is on Radio 4 each evening at 10:45 p.m. And then for programmes on Monday the 29th of September. A new short series begins on the question of what it is to be a healthy child growing up in the UK in 2025. 3 Ages of Child is on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. And for the day's Vintage Comedy, a 1974 episode of Dad's Army is on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m. and at 6:30 p.m. In Tracking the Planet, Emily Knight explores the impact of environmental changes on animals. Tracking the Planet, Exploring the Anthropocene is on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert is at 7:30 p.m. with the Philharmonia Orchestra from the Royal Festival Hall at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. and at 11:30 p.m. on Radio 4, the first episode of Being Roman with Mary Beard, who uses scattered clues to rebuild the lives of citizens of the Roman Empire. Being Roman with Mary Beard, the Inquisitor, is on Radio 4 at 11:30 p.m. And then Tuesday, the 30th of September, All in the Mind on Radio 4 explores the value and roles of AI chatbots in mental health support. All in the Mind is on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. And today's vintage comedy choice is a 1958 episode of The Goon Show on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And Radio 3 in Concert today brings you a programme of Rachmaninoff's Preludes. That's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Assignment Crossing Continents, John Murphy, looked at the plight of Haitian migrants in the Dominican Republic on BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m. and repeated at 8:05 p.m. and on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. And the second episode of Being Roman with Mary Beard, Death on the Nile, is on Radio 4 at 11:30 p.m. And then to Wednesday, the 1st of October. A new series, The Magnificent O'Connors, delves into a change of events that began more than 80 years ago. The Magnificent O'Connors is on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. The Lazarus Heist explores the cyber heist in which $1.5 billion disappeared in minutes. The Lazarus Heist is at 1:30 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. on the BBC World Service. And there's a new series of a Nordic thriller, Murder in Åland, and that's on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Today's vintage comedy is a 1958 episode of Hancock's Half Hour on BBC Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m. and at 6:30 p.m. And the Radio 3 concert this evening features the LPO at the Royal Festival Hall, with a programme that includes music by Beethoven and Tchaikovsky. The Radio 3 concert is at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. Being Roman with Mary Beard, the third instalment, Soldiering for Softies, shows a different side of the battle-hardened Roman soldier. And that's Radio 4 at 11:30 p.m. Next, Thursday, the 2nd of October, the documentary Powering Nigeria examines the problems of electricity supply in Nigeria, a nation of 200 million people where some 80 million still do not have access to electricity. The documentary Powering Nigeria is on the BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m. and at 8:05 p.m. Rethink Nightlife examines how the pandemic affected the nightlife industry and whether it needs government intervention. Rethink Nightlife is on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. In Master Tapes, Don McLean discusses his 1971 album American Pie. Master Tapes Part 1 is on Radio 4 Extra at 4:30 p.m. with the second part tomorrow at the same time. And the Radio 3 in Concert is from the Liverpool Philharmonic Hall and includes Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. And that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. A special programme, Grand Old Opry Live from London, is on Radio 2 at 8 p.m. And finally, Friday, the 3rd of October, the food programme, In Search of Mustard in Norwich, asks whether the Norfolk city is in danger of forgetting its mustard heritage 5 years after the Coleman's factory left Norwich. The food programme, In Search of Mustard in Norwich, is on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. In Heart and Soul, the presenter visits the Esfigmenou Monastery on Mount Athos in northern Greece. Heart and Soul is on BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m. And Master Tapes on Radio 4 Extra brings you the final episode of Don McLean talking about his album American Pie. And that's Radio 4 Extra at 4:30 p.m. The news quiz brings you the weekly comedy panel game, and that's on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Friday night is Music Night. Celebrates John Rutter's 80th birthday with a programme of his music from Saffron Walden, with the BBC Concert Orchestra and singers. Friday night is Music Night is on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Free thinking, what is a good life? Discussion around Michael Rosen's new book, Good Days, about what it means to be good. Free thinking, what is a good life, is on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. And I hope you will enjoy or have already enjoyed some of the programmes I have selected for you this week.
TNS Soundings.
Welcome back to the Express and Star pub quiz. And this week's round, it's Notable Seconds. Question 1. Neil Armstrong was the first, but who followed him onto the moon? Question 2. Sir Geoff Hurst is no longer the only man to score a hat-trick in a World Cup final. Who repeated the feat in 2022? Question 3. Which Bee Gees song was the second track to be played on Radio 1? Question 4. Who arrived on the North Pole around 5 weeks after Roald Amundsen in 1912? Question 5. Jacques de Lesseps followed in whose footsteps by flying across the Channel in 1910? Question 6. Who was the second US president to be assassinated? Question 7. Charles Thompson was the second man in US history to do what? Question 8. What is the claim to fame of Svetlana Savitskaya? Question 9. Who was the second non-royal, after William Shakespeare, to appear on a UK postage stamp? And question 10. Following Boris Becker, who was the next unseeded player to win the men's singles title at Wimbledon? How's your Notable Seconds knowledge? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the Notable Seconds round. Question 1. Neil Armstrong was the first, but who followed him onto the moon? Buzz Aldrin. Question 2. Sir Geoff Hurst is no longer the only man to score a hat-trick in a World Cup final. Who repeated the feat in 2022? Kylian Mbappe. Question 3. Which Bee Gees song was the second track to be played on Radio 1? Massachusetts. Question 4. Who arrived on the North Pole around 5 weeks after Roald Amundsen in 1912? Robert Falcon Scott. Question 5. Jacques de Lesseps followed in whose footsteps by flying across the Channel in 1910? Louis Blériot. Question 6. Who was the second US president to be assassinated? James Garfield. Question 7. Charles Thompson was the second man in US history to do what? Sign the Declaration of Independence. Question 8. What is the claim to fame of Svetlana Savitskaya? She was the second woman in space. Question 9. Who was the second non-royal, after William Shakespeare, to appear on a UK postage stamp? Francis Chichester. And question 10. Following Boris Becker, who was the next unseeded player to win the men's singles title at Wimbledon? Goran Ivanišević. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Albion Match Report. Early Championship pace setters Middlesbrough extended their lead at the top of the table as they defeated West Bromwich Albion to record their best ever start to a league season. The victory made it 16 points out of possible 18 as Rob Edwards' side recorded a fifth win in six games to move 4 points ahead of Stoke City. A first Borough goal in each half from summer arrivals David Strelick and substitute Cali Sane proved too much for Albion and maintained the feel-good factor that head coach Edwards has generated in his first few weeks on Teesside. Norway striker Orn Hegbo pulled one back late on for the Baggies with a header, but they slipped to a second successive defeat after starting the campaign unbeaten. Although they remain fifth, Ryan Mason's team are likely to drop below that with the rest of the weekend's fixtures to come and a congested early season table. Ryan Mason's comments were, "A disappointing result. The small details dictated how the game went. Their goal was from set play, was disappointing. I didn't feel like they created a great deal, but they scored at good times and made it tough for us to break them down. The second half we showed a little more belief, a little more directness, and we created opportunities. So it's a disappointing result. We need to respond and we have another training week to improve and hopefully turn it around."
TNS Soundings.
Here's a piece of history about a life-changing sight loss service that actually started in Rotherham in South Yorkshire and has just celebrated its 30th anniversary. They are eye care liaison officers employed by the Royal National Institute for the Blind in partnership with the National Health Service to provide emotional and practical support. There are now 190 officers across the country, but the RNIB's first was Kevin Hewish, employed in Rotherham from 1994. Kevin said, "When we started the service 30 years ago, the NHS was a very different place. There was some resistance from certain quarters, but as soon as we started meeting the service's users, we found out what they wanted and what they needed, and we were building this new service. None of us were quite sure how it would be for people with sight loss who shaped the service. The Rotherham service is now based at a community centre in Greaseborough Road, Rotherham. Stevie Johnson was orthopedist at the clinic in 1994 and was so impressed by the service that she ended up working for the RNIB and is now their charity clinical lead. She says, "Very quickly we realised how this service was going to benefit people with eye conditions and sight loss. It meant people with eye conditions could be made aware of all the support and organisations that were available to them that they might not have otherwise known about." The current officer, Gabrielle Bauer, was inspired to become an eye care officer after her husband, Matt Bauer, who has sight loss, previously held the role. She said the role I play here in the clinic at Rotherham is huge. Every day I make sure I'm visible for patients who need support, such as applying for a certificate of vision impairment, applying for benefits, or getting hold of a magnifier. One patient, Jean Derrick, who is 91, says, I was getting so upset because I felt I was isolated and no one seemed to know how to help me. But then Gabrielle contacted me and said she'd take care of everything. I just started crying with relief. Gabrielle helped Jean apply for tax reductions, benefits, and discounted TV license, and referred to her and got her home visits. You can call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999.
TNS Soundings.
Two more drivers before the courts for Kenrick Way Street Racing. Two drivers who raced each other along Kenrick Way in West Bromwich have become the latest to be brought before the courts by Sandwell Council for breaching the Black Country Wide Street Racing injunction. Both men received suspended prison sentences and they each face a court bill of more than £2,000. Appearing at Birmingham High Court on the 12th of September, James Reynolds and James Holding admitted breaching the injunction. They accepted that their speed and manner of driving on the 28th of July 2025 potentially presented a danger to other road users or a danger of damage to property and a public nuisance. Police estimated they were racing at speeds of at least 80 mile to 98 miles per hour on Kenrick Way, which has a 40 mile an hour speed limit. Mr. Reynolds, aged 33, of Durham Road, Wednesbury, and Mr. Holding, aged 36, of Black Lake, West Bromwich, were each sentenced to 42 days imprisonment, suspended for 12 months on condition they abide by the injunction or any subsequent amendment to the injunction. They were also ordered to pay court costs of £2,406.30 each. These are the 12th and 13th drivers to have received a suspended prison sentence for breaching the Black Countrywide order in Sandwell. 10 of those taken to court in Sandwell were caught racing along Kenrick Way, West Bromwich. Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Holding had already pleaded guilty to dangerous driving in relation to the incident in separate criminal proceedings held at Dudley Magistrates Court on the 2nd of September and the 26th of August 2025, respectively. They each received 24-week suspended prison sentences, were ordered to undertake 20 days of rehabilitation activity and were banned from driving for 18 months and will need to take an extended driving test before they can drive again. A High Court street racing injunction led by the City of Wolverhampton Council on behalf of Sandwell Council, Dudley Council and Walsall Council and supported by West Midlands Police prohibits people from participating in, as a driver, rider or passenger, street racing, from promoting, organising or publicising gatherings, or from participating as a spectator. The injunction covers the whole of the boroughs of Sandwell, Dudley, Walsall and Wolverhampton, and anyone found to be breaching it will be in contempt of court and may be imprisoned, fined or have their assets seized. They may also be ordered to pay the council's legal costs of any hearing. In Sandwell, incidents of street racing, also known as car cruising, should be reported to the council at sandwell.gov.uk/ASB or to West Midlands Police on 101. In an emergency, always dial 999.
TNS Soundings.
I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
In this podcast, we are chatting about library services and the charities that offer help to blind and visually impaired to access audio, braille, large print and tactile books.
If you struggle to read print, there are many ways to access books in different formats. Local libraries will be able to advise about what they can offer, and there are many charities and organisations that specialise in print difficulty.
One such charity is Calibre, and for a monthly or annual charge, there is access to their audio lending service, with over 20,000 books in 70 categories, including over 3,000 children's titles. Their services is free for young members under the age of 25 living in the UK.
Their collection is full of contemporary children's authors, including Michael Merpogo, Jacqueline Wilson, J.K. Rowling and Philip Pullman, as well as classics. They also keep up to date with titles that support the GCSE, A-level and PSHE national curriculum. Schools and colleges can open an account to allow teachers to see how the service can be used to support students with print disabilities.
The contact details for Calibre are telephone number 01296 432 339. Or you can email them on enquiries@calibre.org.uk, which is enquiries@calibre.org.uk. Another charity that offers audiobooks and magazines is Listening Books, who have been going since 1959. And we had a chat with Claire Bell about what they have to offer.
We provide an audiobook service for anyone who can't access printed books. So that includes visual impairments or illnesses, and also people with mental health conditions as well, such as anxiety and depression. So we try and support as many people as we possibly can across the UK. Our patron is Stephen Fry, so sometimes you might see him talking about audiobooks and how they've benefited him. He's been our patron for a number of years and supports us to share information about the service that we offer. So we work a little bit like a library where the members can borrow the books from us, and we add to the catalogue constantly. So the range of books kind of is always increasing. So we have about 9,500, possibly nearer 10,000 books now, which we add to monthly, weekly, depending on what funding is available, what members have requested. So we're very much member led. So we go from about age 7 right through to adult. So that includes fiction books like The Famous Five, right through to adult self-help books. One of the most popular categories we have is kind of cozy crime books, as we call them. So that's kind of the Agatha Christie's, the Agatha Raisin type books. In recent years, we've added a lot of other titles as well. So kind of crafting or things that you wouldn't traditionally think as being an audio book as well. So as I said, we're member led. So what we tend to do most often is take requests from our members. So if there's a particular title or an author that someone requests and we can go and find an audio version, we will do that and put it into the catalogue. What we also do is record a lot of educational titles. So those are the books that aren't available in audio that are educational, either because they're on a set text list for GCSE or A-level, or they are more broadly supportive of education. So it might be, you know, things like Horrible Histories we did when they weren't available in audio. And in recent years, we've kind of focused a lot on anxiety and depression and dealing with grief and those kinds of mental health conditions that are related to that. So we're always kind of trying to supplement the catalogue with those books that maybe members can't get elsewhere. That would be really beneficial. Members also get access to newspapers and magazines now as well, which is something we added a few years ago. And all of the newspapers and magazines come with an audio function, so you can listen to them, and they've got a visual element too. So those have been a really lovely addition to the catalogue to kind of expand what our members can have access to. And it's all included as part of their membership. As I've mentioned, our age range kind of is quite broad. So we go from age 7 upwards, because that's kind of the age that books make sense as an audiobook. Although we do kind of cater for ages slightly younger with some read-along books. So those are books where they have a visual element like pictures and things. So it's kind of like a picture book with the audio that goes with it. But yeah, right through up to adults and all the books that you can get for that.
Claire then went on to explain about how their membership works and what members can expect.
So how our members access those books has changed over the years. So we used to do tapes and CDs. We're now purely online with an app called Libby, which a lot of your listeners might already know about. It's available in a lot of libraries. And it's got a whole range of accessibility features on there that enable members to access our catalogue and then download them for later. They can also access books through our website as well, but that purely streaming, so with connection to the internet. And then in terms of how long members can keep them, there is a maximum of 3 weeks, but you can renew them or reborrow them. There's no kind of limit within that borrowing time, particularly, you know, some books are 24 hours long. You're not going to listen to that particularly quickly. Some of them are a lot shorter and you might want to return them and then borrow something else. So it's fairly flexible when you get reminded each time a book's kind of due to return. In terms of how members join, we have a subsidised membership fee. Because we are a charity, we try and keep that as low as possible. So we offer a fully subsidised membership as well. So for those who couldn't afford, for whatever reason, they can have a free membership or what we call a sponsored membership. And then they can access it, everything that everyone else would be able to with the paid membership. And then they get lots of extra features as well. So members get monthly newsletters where we talk about the new books. We have author interviews. We also run competitions in our bi-monthly larger newsletter, which has loads of different kind of features in there. So we really want it to feel like more of a club than a service in that way, in that members, you know, can talk to us and there's always someone available on the phone or by email, and we'll go out to exhibitions and groups where we can to talk to people. In terms of whether anyone needs help, you know, there's always someone at the end of the phone or an email to help either download the app, join through the website, join over the phone if you need help. We spend a lot of time talking about books and sharing those books that we would recommend, or if people are not sure what they want to listen to, if they're kind of just starting out with audiobooks, we can recommend titles to get started with. So if anybody rings up, they'll probably speak to Jeremy. Jeremy's been with us for over 20 years, so he knows the catalogue really well. He knows the members really well. So that's probably the first person you'll talk to is Jeremy, and then potentially me as well. So there's always someone there that can help access the service. We're here, and I'd love it if people kind of gave us a ring. And if you have any questions, do ask about how it works or the books that are available, because we, you know, we always want to make it as easy as possible for people.
One of life's joys is sharing a book, and the charity Clear Vision Project runs a postal lending library service for children's books, designed to be shared by children and adults with and without sight. They lend books all across the UK and Ireland. Clear Vision Books all have braille, regular print, and pictures. This allows children with sight impairment to share books with their sighted friends and family. It also allows adult braille readers to enjoy stories with sighted children. There are over 10,000 books in the collection, catering from children from birth up to their independent readers.
They also have the UK's only loan collection of fully textured tactile image books, in which every illustration is specially designed to be explored by touch. With Clear Vision Books, visually impaired or blind children and adults can enjoy all the pleasure, comfort and excitement that reading together brings. Books which contain both print and braille are rare in the UK, which means blind children learning braille can't share books with their friends, their family, or in the classroom. And this makes it harder for sighted parents and teachers to support a young braille reader in learning to read and with schoolwork. It also means that braille reading parents and grandparents struggle to find picture books to share with their sighted children for their education or enjoyment. Early literacy experiences set the foundation for children's learning, and shared reading is hugely important in this. Books with tactile pictures are even rarer, but they're perfect for children with all levels of sight impairment to build up their touch skills, learn about the world, and get all the enjoyment that sighted children get from a picture book.
The service is free to families, but there is a cost for schools and other organisations. The contact details for Clear Vision Project are Phone 020 87 89 95 75, and the email address is info@clearvisionproject.org, which is info@clearvisionproject.org.
A good book can transport the reader to another time or place and bring learning to life. Another charity, Living Paintings, provide their Touch and See books, which is a free library of accessible books, images and resources.
So what's in the books? A picture book with braille pages and painted raised tactile images. Audio descriptions with music and sound effects on CD or USB. The audio description is also available to stream from an online account for the duration of the loan. They also have a whole world of tactile audio box sets to help blind children visualise the world around them. Raised images to help little fingers understand more fully the details of an image that may be difficult to explain. For inquiries, call 01 635 299 771 or email info@livingpaintings.org, which is info@livingpaintings.org.
The RNIB have all kinds of services to access books, magazines and newspapers. RNIB's library is the largest of its kind and it's completely free, with over 60,000 items in the collection. It has 11,000 braille books in a wide choice of genre for both adults and children, and a giant print library amongst its services. For more information, go to their website, rnib.org.uk. That's rnib.org.uk.
And you can also access the Talking News Federation. TNF Soundings provides free high-quality audio content for talking newspapers, talking magazines and hospital and community radios to broadcast to people living with sight loss or other disabilities that make reading difficult. Their content is split into two categories. Information, that's audio publications, which provide information relevant to either a visually impaired audience, a print disabled audience, or both. And Time Out, audio publications which cover a variety of leisure activities, including hobbies, literature, culture and entertainment.
However you access print, it can be an enjoyable experience, and we hope that we have given you some ideas of how this can be achieved. Many thanks to Claire Bell for chatting to us and giving us an insight into listening books.
You've been listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. We'd like to wish you all the very best and ask you to take care. And until the next time, it's goodbye from the both of us.
TNS Soundings.
Useful information about libraries brought to you, of course, by TNF, as you heard. And that brings us near to the end of this edition, except an item I can squeeze in due to something I received early this morning about Chance Glassworks. Now, Janet, one of our readers, her mother used to work at Chance Glassworks years ago. I often pass it on the train and it does look a hell of a mess with all the windows gone. It's near the motorway and the canal and railway, all those layers of transport history. Great efforts have been made to renovate the building and turn it into a cultural historical centre. Here's an excerpt from the oral history part of the Chance website. I hope we might be able to include more of this in future, followed by Sophie Shuttlewood's impressions of the glassworks as it stands at the moment. It must be not very pleasant to walk around the upper levels because all the windows are gone, so pigeons are flying in and out. So you can imagine. Here to end with are a few memories of Chance's glassworks. Sophie Shuttlewood's impressions of the glassworks as it stands at the moment.
I worked at Chance Brothers from 56 till 64. They taught me to be a first-class analytical chemist.
My great-grandfather, John Ward, came down from Sunderland. We're not quite sure when. And moved to Swan Lane, a house in Swan Lane. His middle son, Edward, was my grandfather. So great-grandfather and grandfather were both at Chances.
When I got married, we got married in October. I started in May. We got married in October. I'd already got the house, which was the entrance to Chances, on the Swan Lane entrance, number 24 Swan Lane. So if I was on mornings, 6 o'clock, I used to go between to six and be clocked in by 6 o'clock. And if a ship fitter walking past didn't see the bathroom light on, he used to knock the doorbell for me, so I don't want light.
In the laboratory itself, we were a very close group. We played table tennis every lunchtime because most of the teams that played in the leagues came from the lab, and we did everything together. And it was a wonderful experience. We had a boss who, when we were juniors, we had to address him as Mr. Davis. But once we moved from the junior standing, we called him by his initials, JD. And he was very much a father figure. Although he was the worst chemist I ever met, he was a real father figure. And his understudy, Joe Peatman, was the finest chemist I've ever worked with and a first-class table tennis player.
Well, of course, I did go to visit Chances in my last year at school because they took us around all the various companies in Smethwick to see whether we could find something to do, a job. So we went to Geskin Nettlevalls and Avery's and Chances. And, of course, I remember going to the Chance factory and seeing the plate glass rolling off the mill, seeing it all come off. It was a huge place, very, very hot. Because, of course, the plate glass was still virtually, just off molten. And it was a marvellous experience.
My father also went to work there when he was a young man. My father was a gatherer, but I don't know what that means. His best man, Walt Chadwick, was a glassblower. And when Chances closed, Walter went on to Briley Hill Glass, and he was there until he retired.
I am on a Chance Glassworks heritage tour inside the building at the moment. We're on the sixth floor, I think, not the seventh. Lots of stairways, concrete mainly. Pigeons, uneven floors, sticky floors. Big spaces with Victorian columns supporting the internals of the building, perhaps from the machinery weight. Lots of people in our hard hats and high-vis. It's muggy up here. I was wearing a mask because the air is not fresh. It's definitely got a muggy feeling. Maybe the air not flowing through the building so well despite broken open windows. Very interesting to see, but not any good for access for people with mobility or any sensory impairments, perhaps, as in visual impairments, not safe at all. I hope to bring you descriptions more so another time. I'm currently looking out of the broken window across at the old Chance School, and there's a fire escape, I would presume, up to the top, very top of the roof. I don't think I'd want to be up there that high. It's looking down on an internal courtyard, which does offer probably some wildlife. It's got a lot of buddleia, a lot of greenery overgrown. Quite likely some foxes could be hiding out in there. So it's quite fascinating. And you can see across the tops of Smethwick, very high up compared to the treetops, probably twice as high. So quite fascinating. And I will bring you more in time.
Thank you to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. James, Debbie, Lauren, Sarbjit, Jenny and Kate. Thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz, to Sue for picking all the articles, to Cyrita for uploading to the website, and to Tony, Ray and Gavin for all the work they do putting this edition together and doing the editing and burning everything onto CDs and putting them on the USB sticks that you receive through the post. Well, everyone, the weather looks nice at the moment, so it's good to have some sunshine. Hope you're all okay and have a lovely week.
And thanks, as always, to you, Pam, and to all the team bringing the talking news to you. We do hope to gradually bring in some changes. You've been hearing a few of those as we've included some interviews and pieces about industrial transport history over the past few weeks. And I do hope we can bring you more about Chance Glassworks as soon as I can see how much of the oral history we can use that's there on the internet. And I dare say there may be a visit to Chance's Glassworks in the works before very long. And I also am working on the recording I made of Sue Clovier's son, who used to work for the Express and Star. Bring you that just as soon as I can work through all that. Quite a long recording and some very interesting reflections and memories of the Express and Star as it used to be some 30 years ago. That's something that we'll be including quite soon, I very much hope. That is it for this week. It's certainly been cold of late, and so the heating's had to come on because my leg hurts a bit in this weather, and that does help to keep the place warm. But for now, I must sign off. Do get the pen drives back to us as soon as possible for those who get the talking news on the USB pen drives, because as I say, it always helps keep the paper circulating. For now, it's bye bye from me, Ray, and all the team from Samwell News, and we'll be back with you as always next week. Bye bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.